This episode is sponsored by Verisk Marketing Solutions. As a marketer, there's too much at stake to ever have to guess at the who, what, and when. Verisk Marketing Solutions enriches the consumer data for many of the top insurance carriers, mortgage lenders, banks, and media and ad tech platforms in the US. With the latest identities, attributes, permissions, and in-market behaviors, you can confidently acquire, retain, and grow your ideal customers. Visit marketing.verisk.com for more information. Hello, everyone, and thanks for hanging out with us for the Behind the Numbers weekly listen and eMarketer podcast made possible by Verisk Marketing Solutions. This is the Friday show that thinks that Moose will always win. Is that the conclusion we came to? Moose always win?
I think that's a reasonable... A reasonable
always win.
I can attest, yes.
Rocks always win.
Rocks will always win.
Wrestlers?
I believe the most recent conclusion.
Or the geological variety. I'm your host, Marcus Johnson. In today's show, could Threads replace Twitter?
The vast majority of the country and the world that is not on Twitter, are they desperately seeking a Twitter clone where things are just civil? Is that why they weren't on Twitter? I don't think so.
Is TikTok where the internet is going?
If you look at the metrics people are looking at, companies are looking at, they want engagement. And TikTok is quickly becoming one of the highest engaging platforms out there.
Advertisers and publishers push back at the FTC's click to cancel proposal.
So maybe the proposal evolves, as they often do, but there is no convincing argument that making it as easy to cancel a subscription as it is to create one leaves consumers worse off.
Will ad-supported or ad-free video streaming win? And how items move around the world? Join me for this episode. We have three people. Let's meet them. We start with our principal forecasting writer based out of New York City. It's Ethan Kramer Flood, ladies and gentlemen.
Heyo.
There he is.
Sometime.
Okay, Will Smith. Was that his song?
Summer.
We don't have the money to play it, but maybe Victoria can sing it for us. We're also joined by one of our senior analysts on the digital advertising and media team based out of Virginia, Mr. Evelyn Mitchell Wolf.
Hello, everyone. Happy Friday.
There she is. Yes, indeed. And finally, we're joined by one of our senior forecasting analysts based... Actually, Zach, where are you these days?
Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
There he is. It's Zach Goldner.
Hey, Marcus. Hello, listeners.
Hello, fella. Welcome to the Weekly Listen. Zach's first time on the show. So welcome to him. Welcome to the listeners. What do we have in store for you? Well, we start with the story of the week. We're talking about Threads, this new app everyone can't help but downloads and that could replace Twitter, maybe. I don't know. We'll talk about it. We then move to the debate of the week, where our panel will give the best for and against arguments for each of the three stories we have for you. And then we end with dinner party data. That's where we talk about some random trivia. But we start with the story of the week. Could Threads replace Twitter is the question. Instagram owner Meta has just released a new companion app to Instagram called Threads, a Twitter rival potentially, and it's beaten a record set by OpenAI's ChatGPT app. It appears to have taken the crown as the most rapidly downloaded app ever, quite easily, quite handedly beating ChatGPT. It had 10 million signups in the first 7 hours, 100 million users within a week. Took ChatGPT 2 months to reach that number. Threads is positioned as a real-time public conversations app or a text-based Instagram, if you will. In order to sign up for Threads, users must have an Instagram account. Folks already had an Instagram account, were able to log in with their existing usernames and follow the same accounts on the app as well. It's here, folks. We've been hearing a lot about it. Initial reactions.
Does anyone have a Threads account here?
No.
Pre-download it.
Uh-oh.
I want to see what's
all
about.
Hello. Zach's been enlightened.
Yeah.
Talk to us.
Well, I do have to say, so first of all, I want to get out of the way. I think we're all really looking forward to the widely anticipated cage match between the two tech billionaires, Elon versus Zuck. But Zuck decided to take the high road and just copied yet another social media platform, but it's pretty bare bones when you're comparing it to that of Twitter. But it should be a huge warning and alarm bells should be ringing throughout all of Twitter's offices, and the 20 employees left at Twitter, I'm sure, are very scared at the moment. But with that being said, So Threads has the integration factor with that of Instagram. And what that means is that Threads is able to attach itself to Instagram's user base. If you were to look at it with the US, that's over 100 million US users, 135. And worldwide, that's 1.4 billion users that get attached to. So with that being said, Threads right now is at 100 million global users. And comparing that to Twitter, I believe Twitter's monthly active users is roughly 500. So within 5 days, it's reached 1/5 of the audience of that of Twitter. So big alarm sign. As of right now, it still is very much a shell of what Twitter is, but it's going to be a safe haven for that of brands. And it's going to continue to take away ad dollars from that of Twitter. As of right now, Threads is not advertising, but it should be scary for Twitter moving forward as more advertisers may pull some of their ad dollars and go over towards the Threads.
Evelyn, do you have an account?
I do not. And I decided not to make an account because if you create an account, you cannot delete that account, that Threads account, without deleting your Instagram account as well. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, I barely use my Twitter as it is. I haven't tweeted since like 2017. So it didn't feel like the need was there to then risk needing to deactivate my Instagram account, which I use very frequently. So maybe I'll create like a fake Instagram account just to see what's going on in Threads. But from my personal decision-making standpoint, I'm not there yet. Maybe one day.
Okay. I mean, Zach mentioned how many people have jumped on board already. It's quite staggering, but yeah, it's easy. You know, they made it pretty damn easy. A couple of clicks and you already had an account.
Very easy. You give over all your personal data and there you are, a Threads member.
That data, the data situation is freaky. I mean, that's why in the EU, Threads has not launched yet, because there are some big question marks there as it pertains to the Digital Markets Act. So, I mean, the data piece, that's also another reason I decided not to make a Threads account. Meta already has enough information on me, I think.
Yeah, Threads launched, so it launched in over 100 countries. So the US, Australia, Canada, Britain, Japan, but none of the 27 EU countries, because as Evelyn pointed out, tougher data privacy rules. But yeah, easy to set up. And that's why a lot of people have joined. They're going to a different space, town square, nightclub, whatever, you know, bar, and they're seeing, you know, some familiar friends in that space. You download the new app and existing Instagram folks can import all of the same functionality and also the same features, their bio, their username, profile photo, follow list. So it's easy to get set up and you don't have to start growing those followers from scratch. It seemed like Mr. Zuckerberg, he's had his eye on Twitter for a while. He tried to buy them back in 2008. Mm-hmm. Twitter said no. And now he's gotten around to creating somewhat of a clone. A lot of people say it looks almost identical. Zach mentioned that it's kind of a scaled down version. Looking at kind of a side by side, so in terms of post length, it's about double for Threads, about 500 characters to the 280 for Twitter. Links you can have on both, photos you can have on both. 5 minutes worth of video on Threads to 220, 2 minutes, 20 seconds for Twitter. And then there's some stuff that Threads is missing. There's no edit functionality. Similar to Twitter in some respects, but no direct messaging, trending stories, hashtags, things like that over on Threads, but that Twitter does have. What do you think, Ethan, when you kind of stack Threads up against Twitter? Is there's a kind of viable contender for a lot of that, the share of the microblogging world?
Yeah, I mean, you phrase this as how big of a problem is this for Twitter? And I guess the answer is, yeah, it's a problem for Twitter, sure. And I guess 100 million downloads is moderately impressive, but I have a dark cloud, negativity-infused hot take on this entire endeavor, in that it's not so much about only Twitter, it's about both. And I think the most likely outcome for this whole business is that it's going to be a lose-lose proposition for both.
Yeah, I can see that.
It doesn't seem very likely to me that either is going to come out the other side in a good position. This is not a fight that anyone is going to win in a way that will make the rest of us think, oh, what a triumph for X or Y. There's not enough people on Twitter that hate Twitter and want to leave it to go over to Threads to make Threads a booming success, right? So we know that Twitter is struggling. They're losing people. They're losing time spent. They're using lose users, and they're obviously losing a lot of advertising revenue. But there is a significant subset of existing Twitter users that are perfectly delighted with the rage-infested cesspool of poison and hatred and anger and yelling that is that town square that Elon wanted it to be. They're happy there. They're not going to leave because that's what they like. And then among the folks that will leave and have already started leaving because they don't like it, sure, they'll go over to Threads, but how many people, you know, maybe that could be some millions, right? But that's not a lot. It's not 100 million, much less a billion or whatever it would take to really, I guess, move the needle and make Threads a really bang up investment on the part of Meta. And then there's the whole grand rest of the world that isn't on Twitter in the first place. Yeah. And so I guess they're assessing, like, are all these people, the vast majority of the country and the world that is not on Twitter, are they desperately seeking a Twitter clone where things are just civil? Is that why they weren't on Twitter? I don't think so. They want video and images. That's why TikTok is TikTok. That's why everyone is spending all their time where they're spending it. So there could be some folks at the margin that will join. And maybe Meta's internal numbers would consider it a success if they just did okay, right? Some marginal increases in the total umbrella of users and time spent on the Meta empire and some marginal increases on advertising at the expense of Twitter. Maybe that's a win. But I think both of them are going to come out smaller than expected.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, especially like the initial hullabaloo about it, about how quickly people are signing up for it. It is easy to sign up for it, but then the challenge becomes, all right, the novelty is worn off. Are people actually going to use this? Especially if they weren't already using Twitter, like you mentioned, Ethan, if they didn't have a reason, a specific use case that Twitter was serving for them, or that, you know, if they weren't microblogging in the first place, once Threads is like old news, maybe they'll just stop using it. Maybe they won't delete it because they have their Instagram that they're still using. But just having people sign up is not the battle.
That's a great point. My one other point of why I could see Threads really not thriving is that when it comes to Twitter, people are there to go on a debate on politics or technology, and things are going to get you thought provoking. When it comes to that of Threads' new app, the way their algorithm is working is it's not pointing you towards that same mind-altering, infuriating kind of drama. It's going to be, once again, more of a brand-safe area where brands are going to hop off away from Twitter. It's not going to be the most engaging content, at least not as of yet. And for that reason, I could still see those that are using Twitter to continue to use Twitter. And those that are going to Threads are going to try it out for a little bit until it really does improve and goes away from you just viewing the largest brands that you follow for it to really have their own kind of sects of people, different groups.
Yeah. I mean, Ethan, you mentioned, it's all really good, great points for us. Ethan, you mentioned kind of the marginal increases at the expense of Twitter. Mm-hmm. And that's incredibly true. Marginal in being the main word there, because Twitter, for all the headlines it grabs, it's still at 0.6%. It's less than 1 percentage point of the US digital ad market. It's about 4 times smaller than TikTok at this point, US digital ad revenue. So yeah, if they are able to take those dollars, advertisers, I'm sure if they took their Twitter dollars and spread them over the Meta ad ecosystem, that might make it a little bit easier to spend those dollars than having to do it on a different platform. Maybe they like hedging their bets across different platforms. As Zach mentioned, no ads for the first year on Threads. So we'll see. Twitter, considering legal action, claiming Meta hired dozens of former Twitter employees who had and continue to have access to Twitter's trade secrets and other highly confidential information that ultimately helped Meta develop what they termed the copycats of the Threads app. So we'll see where that goes, if anywhere. Me and Jasmine Emberg, who's one of our principal analysts covering social media, will be talking about Threads on Monday. So tune into that episode for a slightly deeper dive on this topic.
Could I give one more point for a strategical move from Zuckerberg? There's been a lot of talk about the status of Twitter's health fiscally. Is it going bankrupt? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen? As we talk about those incremental dollars, maybe it's incremental when it comes to Meta. It's already got billions and it's already by far and away the largest social media platform. But if you take away a revenue source away from Twitter that's trying to get as much money as they can at the moment and are really scrounging for those little ad dollars, if it does go bankrupt, you're taking away a platform that has a dedicated user base, which means more engagement to the Meta properties. And over time, once again, that'll translate to more ad revenues and less of a potential threat moving forward.
Yeah, fine points indeed, folks. That's all we've got time for the story of the week. Time now for the debate of the week. Today's segment, Make the Case. This is the segment where our panel, Evelyn, Zach, and Ethan, present the for and against arguments for each of the following stories based on three news stories. It's two contestants, the face-off per question. Also, the following takes don't necessarily reflect the analyst's personal views. Their job is just to present the best case regardless and offer objective analysis. So, three questions, as I mentioned. For question one, it's Zach going up against Evelyn. TikTok is where the internet is going, writes Sarah Morrison of Vox. She believes that TikTok is the ultimate example of how our digital world is shifting from seemingly limitless possibilities and choice, the internet of her formative years, into a controlled experience that's optimized to know or decide what we want and then deliver it to us. TikTok, she thinks, is one of the best examples of this change. The social app is designed around discovering content for you and not giving you a platform to find it for yourself. The question is TikTok where the internet is going? Zach, I'll start with you. So TikTok is where the internet is going. 60 seconds on the clock. Make the case.
Yeah, TikTok is addictive. It's unlimited entertainment. It's an ADHD-inducing app where if you look at the metrics people are looking at, companies are looking at, they want engagement. And TikTok is quickly becoming one of the highest engaging platforms out there. I like to think about it compared to what cable channels used to be. People would turn on their TV and just flick through the channels without even having a guide. And they just want to be given content, not necessarily knowing what that content is. So with that, it's people being force-fed this content and not them deciding it upon themselves. When it comes to something like Netflix, there's a study from Nielsen that looks that people spend roughly 10 minutes a day on their smart TVs deciding what to watch. With TikTok, you immediately open the app and you're given your American home videos, or you're looking at your old Vine content, stuff that's highly engaging that people really do enjoy. There's a reason why TikTok is the app that everyone talks about.
You mentioned engagement. So TikTok, close to an hour a day being spent on TikTok in the US by TikTok users. That's just shy of how much time people spend with Netflix in the US. Evelyn, TikTok isn't where the internet is going. 1 minute on the clock, make the case.
So the article we read was really interesting and used TikTok and elements of the TikTok experience to illustrate the future of the internet, where the pendulum has swung away from endless choice and information overload, to everything is decided by platforms. But it's called a pendulum for a reason. I don't think there will ever be a world where people give TikTok or Meta or YouTube complete control over every piece of information they seek. You know, plenty of people have given those platforms the reins to the information they receive. But the central premise of this argument is that people are losing their ability and their will to have agency over their content consumption on the internet. And decision fatigue is very real, but one can recover from it. And it's true that platforms are agents these days, as they have been in the past, per Zach's point. It's just not conceivable to me that the future of the internet is A, homogenous, where every experience is force-fed to us by one platform or another, and B, that we completely lose the behavior or the need to do our own research or connect with other humans. And one of the big questions that stuck out to me was, who gets to control what you are seeing of reality? And regulators are already keenly aware that this could end up in existential crisis territory, and I doubt that they'll just give up and let platforms continue on their merry way. There has to always be access to uncurated information.
Mm-hmm. Strong start, folks. Very strong start indeed. We move to question two. Evelyn against Ethan this time. Publishers and advertisers push back at the Federal Trade Commission's click-to-cancel proposal, writes Katie Dayton of the Wall Street Journal. The FTC recently proposed a requirement that companies offer consumers an easy click-to-cancel way to get out of subscriptions and memberships. Trade groups representing these parties, publishers and advertisers, have come out against this, saying that mandating a simpler cancellation process would confuse consumers and create problems for businesses. The question is a click-to-cancel proposal likely to pass? Evelyn's up first. A click-to-cancel proposal is likely to pass. Evelyn, make the case.
The arguments against this proposal are ludicrous. Truly, they are so out of touch. They have elicited several guffaws from deep within me. I mean, the Association of National Advertisers argues that consumers are accustomed to complicated cancellations, so accustomed such that any efforts to simplify the process might only cause more confusion. I understand that it is in businesses' best interest to keep customers in their subscription ecosystems, not just because of the revenue that it generates, but also because these relationships are crucial components in first-party data strategies across the ecosystem. And there are some elements of the outcry from businesses that are worth considering. For example, a consumer might actually benefit from a discount offer. Like if they're canceling a subscription because it's no longer in their budget and the discount solves that problem, that's a win-win. But I don't think the proposal is really targeting that kind of exchange. The proposal is targeting that frustrating situation that we have all encountered where you have to click 7 times, yes, I want to proceed. Yes, I acknowledge that I will lose this benefit. Yet, no, I don't want the free gift to stay, right? So maybe the proposal evolves, as they often do, but there is no convincing argument that making it as easy to cancel a subscription as it is to create one leaves consumers worse off. And since the FTC's remit is to protect the consumer's interest, it's only a matter of time before this proposal becomes reality.
They did say that they don't want to, you could make it so easy, you end up doing it accidentally. You end up canceling things accidentally.
I think that's it's just a hypothetical they're bringing up to just try and like throw a bowling ball in the argument and hope it hits something.
Yeah. I can't think of a space in life where that's true, where you like accidentally like, oh man, I canceled the mortgage payments again because of that one click policy. We don't have a house anymore. So sorry guys. Ethan, it's a tough argument to come back against. Click to cancel proposal isn't likely to pass. Make the case.
Yeah, you really gave me the fun half of this one.
You're welcome.
So here's why Evelyn's wrong. So when I was studying international affairs, a wise professor of mine once told me that when it comes to politics, government, whether domestic or international, you can make a lot of money gambling that any given thing is not going to happen. Anytime someone tells you that something is going to happen when it comes to government, politics, or policy, just bet them $10 that it's not going to happen. Because in reality, most things don't happen. Most things don't get done. And particularly with the US government, most things don't get done. And the reason they don't get done is because there's all sorts of ways to gum it up. There's all sorts of ways to bog this down. The people opposed to it are going to spend millions and millions of dollars lobbying against it. You could get Congress involved. It's not just going to end with a nice sounding proposal from the FTC. Someone's going to argue about what their powers really are. Something bigger, more important is going to come up. This issue probably does have bipartisan support, but it's also probably nowhere near the top of anyone's agenda because there's so many other things going on. And that is why this proposal is not going to happen. How's that?
Eh? That was bad. Yeah. Hit you with some.
I bet Ethan.
You thought I had no chance.
I do.
But I went with cynicism.
That was a curveball right there. I liked it.
That was it was more philosophical than I thought we were going. We're going to start with Ethan Gandalf Kramer Flood. That wasn't bad. was not bad at all. All right, folks, we move to our third question. We're going ad supported versus ad free video streaming, and it's Zach against Ethan.
Wait, hold on. I just have to say, because now I'm stuck on Ethan's argument. I feel maybe these businesses should have just stayed quiet, because I feel like putting all these arguments out there that are so ludicrous just makes them look bad. And maybe they will muster up some, like, out of spite, the government will do something. If they had stayed quiet, then I think you're right. It would have probably just, inertia would have taken hold of the situation. Anyways, sorry.
No, you're good.
We'll see.
I'm waiting for Ethan to be like, all we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. Boom. That's a good point there, Evelyn. Move to our third question. Ad-supported versus ad-free video streaming. Zach against Gandalf. Kylene Lukowitz of MediaPost writes that 25% of SVOD subscribers and 32% of new signups are now ad-supported. 25% of SVOD subscribers, subscriptions, and 32% of new signups are now ad-supported, according to Antenna. Both numbers, the 25% and the 32%, are up from 18. So we're from 18 to 25, the other one from 18 to 32. It was 18% before the pandemic in 2019, and those numbers now 25% and 32% today. The question is, can ad-supported overtake ad-free video streaming that we've become used to because of people like Netflix who just had that for so long. Zach, you're going up first. Ad-supported video subscribers can overtake ad-free video streaming subscribers. 1 minute on the clock, make the case.
Yeah, ad-supported video right now is the way video is moving. As you can look at platforms like Netflix, Disney Plus, and others that have been releasing their new ad-tier products, they're doing that because that's the way that the U.S. consumer is trending, that they want to have that option. Because as we look at America as a whole right now, we have the average American household income of the middle class. It's not growing that much. And the amount of options out there for content are continuing to grow. So if someone's still trying to watch their favorite show on Netflix and still watch Ted Lasso and Apple TV, they want to have the option to pay as less as possible. And with that, they're able to subsidize that with watching ad-supported content. So if we were to look at some of the largest subscription OTT platforms, like Netflix or HBO Max or Disney Plus, all of those right now are less than a third of their users currently ad-supported. And that leaves a lot of room for growth. So that's why I believe that ad-supported can overtake ad-free.
Very nice. Ethan, ad-supported video subscribers can't overtake ad-free video streaming subscribers. Make the case, please, sir.
So first of all, we're going to circle back a little later about how when Marcus needs to think of a philosopher to make fun of someone about, Gandalf is who he comes up with.
That's my go-to, yeah. There's no one wiser, so.
So stick a pin in that. But in the meantime, so Zach is right that the ad-supported tiers are doing well. Growth is strong. And then I'm not even sure if this article referenced the FAST, what were the, you know, the free ad-supported TV services, which are also have shown bang out growth in their viewership. So all of this is going really well, and I can't deny that. But you phrased the question, can ad-supported overtake the paid ad-free subscription services? And I'm going to turn Zach's stats back on him and say, no, I don't think it's going to overtake it. That's too extreme because the lead is just too big. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of people are gravitating towards, you know, saving a little money by seeing some ads. And definitely people are gravitating towards those FAST services. And that's great. And they're going to, you know, that's millions of people and those are going to do really well. I don't have anything negative to say about that. But I mean, Netflix is 170 million viewers, the vast majority of whom are paying and are perfectly happy to pay to have it with no ads. And Amazon Prime, you know, one of my stats I like, 70% of U.S. households already have Amazon Prime with no ads on it. These things are just huge, huge, way, way, way out in the front. And there's no indication that people are going to get rid of them or downgrade. You know, Netflix is canceling the password sharing and people are just signing up. They're just paying for it, right? Everyone's sort of used to this. They're used to what they have already. So I think if we were talking about new subscribers and new signups, I think you're going to see a lean into some of this ad-supported stuff to save money. But overall, I mean, the biggest of four of the five biggest ones, Netflix, Amazon, Disney, and HBO, the vast, vast majority of their viewers are paying to avoid ads. There isn't much of a signal that they're tired of that or they're going to go away from it. And so that's just, they're way out in front. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see success in the ad-supported tiers, but that's not going to be the predominant way that this goes.
Mm. So I'm not going to refute any of Gandalf's points. They're all great. But just do want to call the fact that you are seeing a huge increase in the amount of OTT viewers that are watching advertising content. So going back to 2018, it was just a quarter of people that are watching OTT would be watching advertising video on demand. And if you were to look at it today, it's over 60%. So that is the trend of where we're seeing it grow, whether it overtakes or not. We'll see if Gandalf is correct in his assumption. But yeah, I'll have to say on that.
Ethan, if this was the game of the week, that would have been an immediate ejection. You weren't even remotely close to a minute long. we would have had to get security to carry you out immediately. But that was a good answer still.
Gandalf is long-winded. I don't remember a lot of one-liner quips out of him.
Oh, he's full of them. I will not say, do not weep, for not all tears are an evil. Oh, the guy's him is, well, what can't he do? I know this show got deep real quick. But nice job to our panel tackling these stories for the debate of the week. Some excellent points, folks. Let's move on. It's time now for Dinner Party Data. This This is the part of the show where we tell you about the most interesting thing we've learned this week. We start with Ethan.
Oh, okay. So I decided to check out some weather-related data. So I hope everyone is psyched to hear about
the weather.
How hot it is.
Nice.
Just because I'm English doesn't mean
it's really hot.
Ethan always makes our team reviews very engaging with his weather facts.
Yeah, just like you guys noticed that it's hot. Anybody else notice? Okay. So I saw on the news or in reading whatever, I saw that the national media is covering the fact that it's been over 100 degrees for X number of days straight, whatever, a week straight, 100 degrees every single day in some of these places. And the projections are for like 2 more weeks straight of over 100 degrees. And so we're getting all the usual breathless coverage of how unbearably hot it is. And, you know, this has resulted in tragedies and certainly a lot of pain and difficulty in a whole bunch of different places. So I was like, all right, I live in New York City and I'm from Syracuse. This all sounds terrible, but I don't even know how to put this in perspective. So I wanted to check and see exactly how usual or unusual, you know, because the media sometimes is like, all right, are we just talking about how hot it is in Arizona and Texas because we just have to have something to talk about? Or is this really unique what's going on now? And it's a little bit of both. So the statistics I came up with do show that, you know, this is bad. Things are bad. Things are getting worse. But there are certainly some localities in this country, including many of the ones that are getting nailed right now, for whom this is not unusual at all. I mean, this is like normal life. And when the rest of us in the country listening to this news are like, oh, my God, that's terrible. But it's actually pretty normal. So my data points have to do with this 100 degree marker. So in Phoenix, which is one of the cities that is currently dealing with X number of days in a row, they average 111 days per year where it gets to be over 100 degrees. 111 days per year, and the record was 145. So the fact that they're going to deal with 21 in a row, I'm sure that's very exhausting and painful, but they average 111. Las Vegas averages 78. This is days in which, you know, the temperature gets to be over 100 at some point. It's not I'm not saying 24 hours straight. Las Vegas averages 78. Dallas averages 20. That's less. But they have reached 113. Right. So I had different conclusions when I saw some of this data. I was like, to some degree, it is probably the media doesn't have much to talk about. And so they're freaking out. The national media is freaking about how hot it is. But the people in Phoenix are like, we do this 111 times a year. It's not the end of the world. There were some surprising results, though, just since we are on dinner table data of the week, and that while Phoenix averages 111 and once did 145 days over 100, the most days that Miami has gone over 100 degrees in a year is one. One
really?
Day. They've never had more than one day.
That is so surprising to me.
New York City did 4. My hometown, Syracuse, did 2. So we are in very different universes. But for some folks right now that are probably watching the national news saying, wow, the country's freaking out about how hot it is here. But frankly, for them, it's normal.
Can't help but think to those people that they should move. You know, something to think about. You also said dinner table data. That's a different segment. We're more fun than that. Well, normally we are when we don't talk about the weather. But
what is it?
You've taken the party out of the segment, unfortunately.
I don't even know what show I'm on.
Ethan, I want you to find me the place with the most consecutive snow days. That's where I'm going.
Don't encourage
desert.
Him, for the love of God.
Well, when we get back together in the winter to do this show, I'll give you that data.
You two are never going to be on again at the same time. We can't go through that discussion. No, that was fascinating. Good stuff. Evelyn, you're up.
Okay, so today is National French Fry Day. In April, All Recipes published a ranking of fast food French fries where they rated each fry on freshness, crispiness, saltiness, and the ability to be eaten alone without a dipping sauce. And I
thought you meant like by yourself.
Well, I mean, anyone can eat fries by themselves. I think that's honestly like peak activity. But I have the ranking right here. So which fast food chains do y'all think are in the top 3? Fry positions.
We're going to have to revisit the peak activity thing. So I'm worried that you're not getting out enough, but we'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. What was your question?
What fast food chains do you think are in the top 3 fry positions?
Fry, like for fry favorite? Sold volume favorite?
No, for best fries, best. Like five best guys. Tasting, best experience.
People love McDonald's fries.
McDonald's is number two. Five Guys has two positions, one for their regular fry, which is number four, and one for their Cajun fry, which is number seven. I'm not sure why they have different. Chick-fil-A is number three.
The one on the West Coast, In-N-Out Burger.
Not on the list because it has to be a national chain.
We don't know the number one.
Wendy's?
It is Wendy's.
Really?
Yeah.
Wendy's?
So Wendy's
I've not
the
hung
top
out
one.
There yet. Okay.
Their fries are pretty good. Do y'all have an idea on the lowest ranking fry?
Oh,
I'm not a fry aficionado.
It's Popeyes.
Popeyes.
What? Is ranked last on this list, number 12.
Okay, forget. We're cutting this whole segment out. We can't. No. Popeyes, I'm so sorry that this had just happened. Absolutely. Oh, their everything is good. Let's be real.
I mean, for what it's worth, I agree. Popeyes fries are delicious. So it is a subjective ranking, but there you go.
Yeah, it is. Don't listen to anything Emily just said, listeners. well, Blades, Zach, you're up next, mate.
Yeah, I'm going to regurgitate some info here, but there's a lot of news out there right now about a new energy drink on the market. The energy drink is called Prime Energy, and it's being called to be investigated. So this right here is out for those parents that are trying to be conscious of how much caffeine their kids are intaking. Well, this popular drink is promoted from famous YouTubers Logan Paul and KSI. I know you probably don't know them or you've heard of them in the news for some outrageous thing, but there's been a lot of concerns that it's being advertised towards kids. Think about Juul, but for that of caffeine. So just as a note about how much caffeine Prime Energy has, it has equivalent to 2 cups of coffee or 6 cans of Coca-Cola. So next time you find that 12 fluid ounce can of Prime Energy, just think about how much caffeine you're really intaking.
Not enough is the answer. Get two off the shelf.
2 cups of coffee is like, it would send me kind of vibrating off the planet. But I think for most people, if I had 2 cups of coffee in a row, I probably would not. My metabolism would freak out. But I feel like 2 cups of coffee is not actually that much caffeine. Most people can.
That's kind of normal for some of us in the morning.
I think the main concern is the primary drink they have is a sports drink. And now they have this new energy drink, and they believe that it's being advertised to the same demographic. And they want to have a sports drink and then caffeine, and they're way too much caffeine. We've all probably seen those kids that are bopping around with too much energy. We don't need more of that.
Kids of the West.
Red Bull sponsored my a cappella group 1 year. That was wild. We all really... We really went too much with the Red Bull.
I didn't consume caffeine at all when I was a kid or a teenager.
That was in college. I feel like that's different, but...
College is when it changes.
There we are. That's when it changes. Very nice. I've got one for you real quick. I thought I was going to have the most painfully boring data for this segment, but Ethan, thanks for showing up, man. You really outdid me.
Your weather,
exactly. I was like, I got some stuff on shipping. But it's not going to be that bad, apparently. So I've got a couple of facts for you about shipping, how stuff moves around the world. 80 to 90% of the world's goods are transported by ship. So everything, basically. Last year's global shipping fleet numbered over 100,000 ships, including tankers, bulk transports, container ships. In a single year, a container ship travels the equivalent of 75% of the way to the moon and back in 1 year. Container ship, painstakingly slow pace. But that's because they're huge. The largest container ships are 1,300 feet long. It's 400 meters for our non-American people. That's 8 planes long, end to end. They carry up to 20,000 containers each, which is insane. It's hard to wrap your head around until you Google container ship, and then you're like, good God, be a nightmare. I always think if they've like put one at the bottom and they're like, where's that container of basketballs? It's like, oh, damn it. So at the bottom, we're going to have to get out. You're going to take all the stuff off the top. We've all been there. Almost every shipping container is built in China, like 97% of them.
Wow.
And then finally, about 1/3 of the world's ship crews have no means of communication whilst at sea.
Oh my goodness.
Well, even worse than that, only 10% have any kind of internet. My God, they have to talk to each other. Yuck.
Well, I was wondering, as you shared these stats, how many people have jobs, like seafaring jobs these days, and compared to
1.5 million.
1.5 million.
Oh, I don't have historical data, but about 1.5 million people are part of this shipping world. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But not as many as I thought, considering that they ship all of the stuff in the world.
Well, I imagine.
But I guess they're just over the water.
Well, and they've probably automated everything, like down to a T, where they don't even really need very much supervision on the ships. But I am curious, though, about like how many compared to in history, where, I mean, the sea has always been, not always, but, you know, for a major part of our history, a big kind of economic hub. And so I would be curious to know, compared to previous eras, where we sit.
Yeah. Ethan will not be looking into that for you because he's busy
now
looking up horrifyingly boring weather stats.
These dinner parties are just banging. They're just bangers.
Please never invite me to one that you and Zach are part of. But that's all we got time for. But I can only imagine how thrilling these forecasting meetings. What the hell happened after I left the team, huh? Just all downhill. Oh, I'm going to have to speak to Shalene about this. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you so much to Ethan.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you to Evelyn.
Thank you, Marcus. Thanks, everybody.
And thank you to Zach.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes, indeed. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show. James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. Thanks to everyone for listening in. You can head to behindthenumbers_podcast on Instagram. We're not on Threads quite yet. If you want to say hi to us, we'll see you guys on Monday, hopefully, for the Behind the Numbers Daily, a new marketing podcast made possible by Verisk Marketing Solutions. Happiest of weekends.